Time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us in studio, but it's a special day, Eric. It's not just any appearance by you. It's cause for celebration because you, Eric,
yes,
are our 12,000th guest.
Oh my gosh.
On downtown.
12,000.
Yes. Woo! Woo! Celebrate. Good times. Come on.
For all of you not watching on television, because we're not on television, I'm dancing like a fool.
Like Chris, not a fool. That's impressive.
No.
That's like Denny Terrio level stuff there.
There. No. I'm amazed that I even secured my wife, who is herself a dancer, because I don't. That's why I say I joined the band. I'm in the band so that I don't have to dance, because when I dance, my children tell me to stop. And I believe them, I should.
Are you like the male Elaine Bennis?
Oh, man, it's true.
Your dancing makes children cry is what I'm hearing.
That's right. It's like the White Lion song. It's actually all about my future as a father, both dancing and everything else. Oh, gosh. I'm going to comment to whoever texted in, by the way, about how this is a sports show.
Come on.
I'm here talking about wine.
Yeah.
Speaking of which... The Giants won it. No, I'm just kidding.
That was Saquon.
No, but here's the thing. A lot of us like sports, and it's pretty fun to talk about it when you're on on the radio, because you sound good. You've already gotten your hot takes from all the sports stations.
That's right.
The day.
Yes, yeah.
You sound great. Sticking in the sports really quick, and then we'll go to wine, because we're covering Australia and New Zealand today. Congratulations to UMaine.
Whew.
Like, that's no joke. I mean, when you're starting to talk about some of the other people that they're in the conversation with, and by the way, you know when I'm talking about the poaching thing? You know who lost their coach today?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. One of those other four schools. They're watching. But for right now, and as long as we have Harris Simiak, boy, what a good job. Even if that was a tough game to watch the other day. I mean...
You know, it's going to be a tough game to watch. Red turf for 3 hours.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I saw that when you posted that. And I was
boy.
Like, I thought Boise State was bad. I had no idea somebody decided to go with a red. Like, that must have been some very rich alumni's decision.
The inferno. And red uniforms on a red field. It's a play-by-play man's delight.
Isn't it, though? Well, I'm glad that's not my job. My job is to talk about the vino, and we shall. As I've been talking about the Southern Hemisphere recently, we're literally going to jump, because we're going to drink a wine called Stump Jump. But we're talking about Australia and New Zealand today, and then next week I do my special Holy Land edition, talk about viticulture in the place that we're all kind of turning our minds towards, and then we'll do bubbles. So we got to finish up basically the rest of the world right now. Australia, we'll start there. Australia is the world's fourth largest exporter of wine. And it has wine produced in every state, but the heartland of it is obviously Southeast Australia. So picturing Australia, right? It's obviously this enormous landmass. Try to picture... It's kind of like a kidney bean turned on its side, right? With the ends being pointed towards the south. And the majority of the wine we're talking about is in that sort of the southeastern part of that. The wine we're going to have today is from near Adelaide. But basically the whole southern swath there, that whole southern tip, is heavily invested in the wine industry. And that's been both good and bad. We'll talk a little bit about it. A lot of different climates, of course, as in every big wine-producing country, a lot of available climates. Some climates perfect for producing bulk wines because they're very vigorous and not really that great for vines. And then a lot of finer wine regions with really nice cooling effects, both coming up from the south as well as El Niño, La Niña, that's also playing a big part in the climatology of the Australian region. Australia started as a wine region. The first vine clippings were brought from the Cape of Good Hope in the late 1700s, And indeed, by 1822, they were already exporting wines. So a lot of available labor.
Yes.
And very good conditions led to a fierce onset of the industry. And it was very successful, basically right off. Europeans liked them, but they refused to believe that they weren't French. actually, the biggest successes that Australia enjoyed for much of its history, really up until the 1970s, was basically imitation port. So sweet and fortified wines that could make the trip. Of course, we're in the days before refrigerated transport of fine wine. So some of the wines that enjoyed the best successes being imported and exported are fortified wines. Of course, you know, actual port. And then in this region, they basically just took the recipe for port and just doubled down. They have a glut problem, right? So like we, in recent history, remember the gluts of, the 2004, 2005 time. So basically right after the yellowtail phenomenon, and they planted every square inch to wines. But the same thing actually happened in the 1980s. Late 70s and 1980s, again, when they stopped doing the sweet wines and started to switch on to more serious wines, they started going crazy. And actually in the 80s, they had to pay people to rip up vines in favor of some other agricultural products to kind of even out the distribution there. But despite its, you know, difficulty in kind of, you know, finding itself and sort of regulating and not, you know, overcompensating too quickly with planting, they're really, really starting to draw some really interesting artisans. Of course, the winery that we're going to try today, which is the Derenberg Winery, was started in 1912. So they're some of the great pioneers. Of course, Penfolds, best known for their Grange and other wonderful reds. And then some smaller production stuff that is really, really interesting. Still hard to find, getting a little easier. Things to look out for, like Molly Duker, if you're a fan of bigger jammier Shirazes, and Two Hands, which is a little more voluptuous and sexy stuff, and not available in Maine, but if you do find it, Henschke is really excellent as well. We are tasting, as I said, the Stump Jump Shiraz. So this is Derenberg's entry-level wine. They have Stump Jump Shiraz. They also have a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre, or GSM, which is a very, very common type of blend that you're going to see in Australia and very popular. These are perpetually on the top value lists every year, in and out. And you can see why. I mean, the quality is absolutely there. This is on our shelves right now for $9.99.
What?
And yes,
this is $9.99.
Wow. Now that's a special, but do take advantage of it while it's available. But even when it's not on special, it's like $10.99. I mean, it's a very, very good value. I happened to hang out with the importer at a trade show last week, and we worked out a way to get this in people's hands for a good price.
Nicely done.
Yes, sir. Okay, I have to get through New Zealand really quick and then remind everybody about our tasting on the 20th. But New Zealand is basically a surprising new entry onto the wine scene. It's got a lot of inherent problems in getting its wine places because it's 3 hours from the nearest mainland, which is Australia, which is itself hours and hours from most of its customers. So it's kind of surprising that that's been such a huge success, but indeed it is a huge success. Latitude-wise, it is basically, if we were in the Northern Hemisphere, sort of between Bordeaux and Lebanon. So it's in sort of prime area, but it's moderated heavily by the fact that A, a lot of cooling winds, and B, a lot of elevation. So you're seeing wines that are really, really very finessed and beautiful, including wines that, including Australia, for instance, the Shiraz-Syrah grape, you're seeing very elegant style Syrahs from New Zealand, whereas the Shirazes from Australia tend to have a little more muscular style. So really interesting. And, of course, best known for Sauvignon Blanc, especially from the Marlborough region, known for its very bright, distinctive, juicy fruit qualities, very zesty and very friendly for the palate. So do check those out if you're a fan as well. We have a phone call. Is it about sports?
Someone asking about their prescription meds because the number is close to ours.
Awesome. But yeah, so and Marlboro holds 60% of the New Zealand vineyards, except for one planting in 1873. Sauvignon Blanc was unknown in New Zealand until 1973. So pretty crazy how fast that took off. Between 2000 and 2012, the land under vine quadrupled. So like their Australian counterparts several hundred years earlier, they're very enterprising and they've realized a cash cow when they found it. And they're doing very well. But honestly, the wines are great. Even some of the less expensive wines are tremendous. And when you start to get into some of the more delicately farmed things, boy, they're treats. And again, like other places, still we're not getting all the really good stuff. But it'll come. It'll take time, but it'll happen fast. I do want to remind people, because we're running out of time, our tasting is the 20th of this month from 5 to 7. Of course, holiday favorites, staff favorites, high alcohol favorites to get you through dealing with your family. You know the drill. But it'll be a lot of fun, and so I would encourage you to come on out to that. Hours-wise, we're going to be there early on the Saturday before Christmas at 9 o'clock, and then we'll be there on Christmas Eve all the way up until 4 o'clock, and then we're all going home to our separate families to, you know, love them.
There you go.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Eric. And thank you, Christine. And you know what you did.